Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Chad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition. And boy, oh boy, we have a lot to talk about as this was another very interesting week, especially on the back of that inflation data and some of those moves that we were seeing in precious metals and actually a wide range of markets for us to cover here. We are going to, again, focus on all of these topics, but I do want to just remind everybody that you should go back to our website throughout the week. That is kereport.com and listen to all of the market commentaries and a lot of company updates that we recorded, especially now with a bit more interest coming back into the resource sector and resource stocks. Some of these stocks are starting to finally move off of good results, and that's what we keep on trying to share with everybody. That being said, we're kicking off the show with Mike Larson. He is the editor of the Safe Money Report. And Mike, we're going to start off with inflation because we're recording this late in the day on Wednesday. We had the inflation data that came out earlier today. And quite frankly, inflation is hitting 30-year highs. I know you even have an addendum that says it's actually a longer term that we have seen this kind of inflation, but we saw CPI over 6%, 6.2%, the core rate 4.6%. This is flying in the face of all those transitory comments that we had from the Fed, and quite frankly, all those people that said, oh, inflation's not going to last that long. Inflation is sticking around. That being said, we're also still seeing some pretty good growth for the economy. Start us off with your takeaway from the recent inflation data that continues to exceed estimates.
Sure. I mean, I guess I'd start off by saying some of the forecasting, especially at the Fed on this inflation front, has been as atrocious as we saw in the mid-2000s when they were talking about, you know, their views on the housing bubble. If you look at what they've been saying about inflation for many, many months now, they've been wrong, dead wrong. I don't know how you want to call it. But these numbers have been much worse than expected. They've been more persistent than expected. And they clearly show that the economy coming out of the COVID recovery had so much fiscal stimulus thrown at it, so much monetary stimulus thrown at it during the depths of the crisis. But instead of gradually weaning the economy off of that as the economy improved and we came out of the worst of the pandemic, what did they do? They kept the foot not on the gas pedal, not just to the baseboards, but all the way through the car and into the road beneath. So what you've seen happen in this environment of dramatic excess liquidity and enormous amounts of fiscal stimulus being thrown at the market is inflation, the likes of which officially at 6.2% is the worst we've had since 1990. But here, when you look at what happened in 1990, what happened late that year, that's when Iraq invaded Kuwait. And then a few months later, we had Gulf War I. So if you're willing to be an apologist, like a lot of these people trotted out to talk about the Fed today and say, oh, this is supply side only, it's not the Fed's fault. Once these supply bottlenecks will be fixed, inflation's going to go away. And you say it's a one-off transitory thing, well, then certainly you have to go back and say, 30 years ago, it was a one-off transitory thing. I mean, it was a war, right? So if you exclude the spike in 1990, this actually becomes the worst inflation figures we've seen all the way since 1982, when the economy was, inflation was coming down from the double-digit economy-crushing interest rates that Volcker had to put in place to get rid of the inflation we had in the 1970s and early 80s. So long story short, it's really more like the worst inflation data in 39 years, and you have sort of these deer-in-headlights policymakers who not only got this whole thing completely wrong, but don't know what to do about it. I mean, you have a situation now where if you look at a 6.2% inflation rate, you compare that to a federal funds rate of, a range of 0 to 0.25%, or if you look at the 10-year treasury or 30-year treasury around 1.5% and 2% respectively, just under those levels, you're talking about real interest rates, inflation-adjusted interest rates that are the most negative they've ever been or the most negative they've been since the early 1980s, depending on what measure you look at. That is extraordinarily loose monetary policy, an extraordinarily loose policy, even as the Fed is now finally talking about starting to taper things back. Again, just on a real interest rate level, you know, we've almost never been this negative. So what does that mean? That leads to rampant asset market speculation. I mean, you know, we've had 20%+ gains in real estate prices in some parts of the country. We've had the stock market on fire, you know, up until this week, up about 26% year to date for the S&P. You've got all these idiotic companies coming public and people finding buyers for it. You know, we're trading dog coins, you know, up 30,000% from a year earlier and stuff like that. I mean, there's all this excess liquidity that's really led to asset market bubbles. And now from the inflation data, you're seeing a lot of that spill over. So it's really an environment where policymakers have been dead wrong. The policy itself has been dead wrong for what's been going on. And now it's a kind of a, everybody's staring around like, how are we going to get out of this? You know, what do we do? And I think if you look at the bond market, what it's telling you, long-term interest rates, 30, if you talk about the 30-year U.S. Treasury bond, it actually peaked back in March, which you think that's crazy. How can, with these terrible inflation numbers, how are our long-term U.S. bonds not getting crushed? Even recently, you know, we just tested that 1.8% level before bouncing sharply off of it after a lousy Treasury bond auction. Why is that happening? And why is the yield curve flattening, meaning short-term interest rates are going up much faster than long-term interest rates? Because the bond market knows that from a political standpoint, from a real politic, the Fed can't sit on its hands anymore. They can't just sit there, you know, and, you know, whatever, don't answer the phone when the Biden administration calls and says, what the heck are you doing? You're killing me here. They can't sit by and look at this kind of inflation data and with a straight face go in front of a room full of reporters and say, oh, we totally expected this. This is nothing. And I don't care if it's a Zoom room full of reporters. That's how they're doing it now. You add it all together and you've got a Fed that's kind of trapped. You've got an inflation situation, which is, you know, really crushing real earnings and real income. I mean, you put your money in a bank getting a CD that pays you whatever, 20 basis points or something, and inflation 620 basis points. You lose 6% of your money in a one-year CD just doing nothing. I mean, that's why this environment is so crazy, and it really is going to lead to some fireworks, I think.
Yeah, Mike, it's soul-crushing for the savers out there that if they put it in a money market, a CD, even a fixed annuity, they're getting eroded by inflation so much faster. As you pointed out, it's the most negative real rates have been in quite some time, if not ever. And if you think back to what the Fed's messaging was, to your point, they were just cheering inflation on. We got to get it to 2%. Hey, you know what? It's a little bit over 2%, but we want it to run a little hotter. Well, great, guys. You've now tripled it. Now it's at 6% and rising. So there's a point now where they're going to hit a fork in the road. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Mike. When they start tapering like they have, and we get 3 to 4 months into this, and they start pulling back their bond buying, but everybody sees inflation still taking off, there's a point they're going to have to address the rate hikes. And do you think there's a market realization now that there's really no way mathematically they could normalize rates and get interest rates even close to 5 or 6%, even if inflation was to drop off next year? How could they ever even get it close? Do you think that that realization is setting in?
You have kind of this fantasy land, progressive, extreme thinking when it comes to monetary policy and fiscal policy that, oh, you know, let's help the little person by getting them big wage increases by keeping policy really, really loose. Okay, well, wages have gone up quite a bit, 3-4%, depending on what measure you look at. But what they don't tell you is, hey, okay, you got a 4% raise, but your cost of living went up 6%. Guess what? You just lost 2% in real terms. You know, so this whole progressive idea that we're going to just keep policy super loose, we're not going to care about bubbles, we're not going to care about out-of-control asset markets, stupid risk-taking on Wall Street, and, you know, real-world inflation because we're just going to focus on employment, it's silly. And, you know, who's getting hurt by this? You know, are you helping that person, the lower to middle income person, when they can't afford a house, they can't afford college, they can't afford medical insurance, they can't afford groceries? I mean, how are you really doing anybody a favor in the real world by letting ignoring this kind of inflation and, you know, just saying, oh, this policy is great? It's really silly. And, you know, now, again, from a political standpoint, they simply can't keep things this loose. They can't ignore this stuff. Because, I mean, you remember what happened in the mid-2000s, Bernanke going out there and talking about subprime being contained and, oh, there's no nationwide housing bubble, all that claptrap. I mean, we could see it with our own eyes. You could see what was going on with house prices. You know, it didn't pass the smell test. And now, you know, you can't continue to trot out policymakers saying, oh, we're going to monitor this. Maybe the step is to take $25 billion out of next month's bond purchases instead of 20. That's like, you know, fighting a raging forest fire with a water pistol. I mean, it's not going to work, right? So I think that's why I say you're going to have to see policy react a lot more. You're going to have to see a real change in kind of Washington's approach to this. And I think that that's what the bond market's going to sniff out. And that's what I think we're going to see. We're going to see the yield curve get crushed because people are going to realize, and we already have seen it, frankly, but it's going to happen even further, is people are going to realize, you know, you can't sit there and with a straight face say, maybe someday in 2023, we're going to raise interest rates because, oops, right now, your cost of living is the worst in 39 years. I mean, that just doesn't, that just is an impossible intellectual position to take. And it's an impossible political position to take.
So, Mike, big picture, when it comes to this higher inflation data, I've been hearing the reasons for why inflation should be spiking for years, over a decade now. Low interest rates, easy money policy from central banks. But it's just now that we're finally starting to see this inflation, and it is coming right after these COVID lockdowns. And clearly, everyone was tied up at home, and the government was giving everybody money. And now it seems like people are out there spending that money, and in a way, not even arguing about some of these higher prices, or at least they're still out there buying products. Why now? What has changed so much in just the last year compared to the last over a decade that we are seeing this higher inflation?
Well, what did we see throughout the, you know, the mid 2000 or the 2010s? We saw rampant inflation. We just saw it in the asset market. We saw asset inflation, you know, stocks, bonds, risky bonds, real estate to some degree. I mean, it was happening. It's just in the last couple of decades, a lot more of the inflation out there has been money going into the non-productive and things like asset speculation and asset price rising because you're cutting the discount rate that future cash flows are valued at. You know, you cut interest rates further and further and you buy more and more bonds, which helps lower interest rates. What happens? You know, you value assets that generate income at a higher price today because you're discounting the future income you're going to get. It's just the way the math works, right? So we saw rampant asset inflation, you know, in the stock market again and housing to some degree and so on. You can look at things like household net worth relative to income, relative to, you know, other measures of things like GDP. Those ratios got way, way out of whack even before anybody heard of COVID. And now you've got a situation where on top of that sort of monetary stuff that always tends to go into assets or has in the last couple of decades, you throw in enormous amounts of fiscal aid at it. And you know, you've had a lot of policies that have kind of made things worse. Policies that, you know, some were, yes, disease driven, you know, necessities. You've got to shut down various things. You've got to be more careful and have, you know, less capacity and things like that. You know, but a lot of that's only part of the story. Part of the rest of it is just, again, keeping easy policy in place for too long. You know, and on top of that, having some of these supply things, on top of that, having trillions of fiscal being thrown at the economy, on top of trillions of monetary, and that's been the difference here, right? But again, you know, longer term, why do I think that the long end of the bond market, why do you think there's nowhere near the yields we saw in the early 80s? I mean, shoot, a 30-year bond was going for 14-15% in the early 80s in the U.S. You know, now, even after the sell-off late this week on the lousy bond auction, you're still talking about around 2% or a little bit less. That's because of the things we've talked about before, right? We have so much debt piled on top of the U.S. economy. We have, you know, issues like demographics, lower birth rates, less immigration. We have structural issues that make the economy less productive and so on. And all of that results in basically a lower long-term growth rate potential and an impossibility, an economy that can't handle high interest rates. I mean, shoot, if you shock interest rates to 15% now with the trillions and trillions and trillions more debt we have on the U.S. economy than we had in 1981 or 82, it'd be economic Armageddon. So even despite this lousy inflation news, the Fed's kind of trapped. It's going to probably have to raise interest rates, but it's not going to get them anywhere near what we saw in the past. It's going to crush the economy, and especially things like house prices and asset values if it goes too far. So you have a small group of policymakers that are truly caught between a rock and a hard place. And it's a different environment than they faced in a long, long time. You know, as an investor, again, you know, the things that I've talked about, reasonable dividend yield paying stocks, companies that have some, you know, benefit from inflation, obviously gold and silver. I mean, you know, we talked for the last few months. It's like, gosh, you know, when is you stare at gold, you stare at miners, you're like, God, when are they going to get off the mat? But the funny thing is, gold itself made its, you know, in the futures market, made a low back in March. It tagged it two more times, but it never really undercut that. Now here we are at a 5-6 month high. What's finally happening? People are putting two and two together. In this policy environment, I mean, why wouldn't you own precious metals for protection? Why wouldn't you own them for profit potential? I never my bull market thesis and my belief that it was just a longer term correction never really faded. And I certainly don't have any reason to change that opinion now.
Yeah, Mike, I was going to ask you about the move in precious metals just today on Wednesday, where, you know, it broke above that key resistance at 1840 that everybody was watching. Looks like it's going to close the market above that. But is this the beginning of a sustained move, do you think, where more people, more generalists are coming in? Because another strange thing that happened today was that the U.S. dollar started going up even higher, almost to a breakout level. It seemed like a run into the safe havens, and those people run into the safe havens only when they get a little rattled and the markets were selling off at the same time. Do you think this is the beginning of a more sustainable move into the safe havens, in particular the precious metals?
You know, I think that you've got safe haven buying that should be part of this. You've got the more deeply negative interest rates that should be a part of the factors behind gold. You've got, obviously, you know, we haven't seen a lot of supply coming to the market because it's been a muted environment for investing in mines and things like that. So, you know, you roll it all together, and I think you've got a lot of catalysts for this to be a notable and sustainable and extendable breakout. You know, we're going to have to see how gold behaves at these levels. I'd like to see 1850, 1860, maybe even 1870 and hold it there to kind of signal that a true sustainable next leg up is here. But yeah, I mean, you look at all these factors, I don't see any reason why gold can take out its highs that we had back at the peak of the bull market many, many months back, 2000, 2100, that kind of area.
How does this translate into the U.S. equity markets? Because look, the U.S. equity markets, even as you said and spot on, that the inflation was in the markets are still right around all-time highs. So does this environment also support the general melt-up in markets that we've seen?
You know, that's going to be real tricky. We're in a very strong seasonal time of year. But, you know, if the Fed is forced to really act and really crack down, that's going to lead to turbulence. I still think, again, it's so far behind the curve. We're so far from a tight money environment that it's not, you know, it shouldn't be any like disastrous thing. I'm not expecting like the market to crash or something. But, you know, it's potential for a decent correction if the Fed's hand is forced in the next couple of months, could happen. But I think that ultimately this isn't the kind of environment this early in the Fed cycle that you're going to want to be aggressively selling stocks. Once the yield curve inverts, once the Fed's really forced to go pretty far, once you have other credit issues popping up, that's later in every interest rate cycle in the past. I don't think that's going to be different here. So I don't think you really want to get aggressively short here or dump a bunch of stocks. But I do think you've got to be wary of what's going on in the interest rate market. Just keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, usually they say the recession precedes a flattening of the yield curve by about a year to 18 months. So that would still be further down the food chain since it's happening now. But the question, Mike, would be, do you think the Fed is going to be forced to start hiking before they're done tapering? And do you think that would have a general markets effect?
That is entirely possible, because I think you can't. There's a political element. I don't care how everybody says, oh, the Fed's not political, and you know, they're both beyond politics. Come on, that's not how it works in the real world, even if theoretically that's how the structure is set up. So you're gonna see a lot of pressure regarding to bear on the Fed to do something. You know, what that something is, is it more speechifying? Is it, you know, advancing when they raise rates for the first time? What it's gonna be, these kinds of numbers can't be ignored. And that's why I think, yeah, probably gets pulled forward. But again, even if they start hiking, you have to look at are rates anywhere near positive? Is the yield curve, yes, it's getting flatter, but is it close to inverting on key measures like 5s, 30s, or 2s, 10s? No, we're still quite a ways away from that. So I don't think that you're at a point, again, where, I always go back and say, if COVID had never happened, the yield curve had already inverted, we were already heading for recession anyway. The COVID outbreak just dramatically amplified and accelerated that process. But, you know, you still didn't want to sell stocks in 2018 and 2019, even as the curve was getting flatter, because there was still some upside, especially in things like utilities and defensive late cycle stocks. That's going to be the same case, in my opinion, here. You are going to get to the point where the curve does invert. You're going to get to the point where, you know, the Fed is really having to pour it on. That's when you want to get aggressively defensive. But I think that's still in the future.
So, Mike, as we progress through the last, let's say, month and a half of 2021, now that we have that long-anticipated Fed statement behind us and the start of the taper. What's going to be important to watch? Is it data? Is it markets? Is it any certain sector? What are you going to have your eye on?
You know, I think you got to keep your eye on the bond market very closely. Again, watch that curve, see if it's flattening dramatically. I mean, right now it seems to be flattening when rates go up, and it seems to be flattening when rates go down. So you're getting, you know, on days when they go down, the long end goes down more than the short end. On days when rates go up, the long end goes up less than the short end. As that process continues, if it does, as I expect, again, that's something you got to keep in the back of your mind. You got to see if something, you know, this lousy bond auction is followed by even more selling. If people get into that taper tantrum reaction, the stock market can't ignore that. And then you're going to want to see, I mean, there's a lot of speechifying coming from the Fed. I mean, how, you know, what are these people going to say in a straight face? And especially in interviews where the media can challenge them and be like, are you kidding me? what kind of comments are they going to have to say? That's what I'm going to be watching. So again, I'm not in this sort of like sell everything and go into a bunker type environment, but I think that you're probably going to get some choppy, you know, choppy trading here, and you want to keep your eye on the rates market.
All right. Perfect. Always enjoyable chatting with you here, Mike. Thanks for kicking off the show with us. We'll chat again in another couple of weeks, but this week, some of the moves that we're seeing, let's see if they continue the trend that precious metals are on, even the US dollar is on through the rest of this month. But hey, on the back of that Fed meeting, we are starting to see some other trends a bit more defined in the market. Mike, great chatting with you. As always, buddy, thank you for taking some time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.